This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio.
And online at SBNationLive.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, we are back. Hour 2, SB Nation Radio, the next generation of sports radio, and the Big E Sports Show. Connect with us online at Twitter, at E Radio Sports. So excited to open up the mic once again. Our producer, Robert Harris, hanging out with the Big E, kicking it with the Big E on this Friday night. Give him a follow at Twitter, at Robo Harris Jr. He's always got some good posts on there. And right now, I'm going to post you up. Let's talk about the Lakers and give us the state on the Lakers. I mean, here we are. I mean, the regular season, it is going to wind down, you know, very quickly, rapidly. Who deserves the most blame for their struggles? I mean, is it LeBron? Is it the team or his teammates? Who gets the most criticism?
To me, I mean, they're still a young team. You add LeBron there, a lot of veteran leadership there with Rondo, but I still think it's just a team. They're just young. They're inexperienced. They haven't seen those bright lights before. They haven't seen those big moments. They haven't been on TV as much as they've been this season. And it's just the struggles of the season. The team, to me, is just not that good. With surrounding LeBron, they didn't really surround him with guys who can make plays on their own. I mean, they just pretty much just jumped on LeBron's back and said, let's make it happen. Let's get to the playoffs finally in a long time for the Lakers. So I think just the team itself, because they're inexperienced.
Well, they have a collection, when we talk about the Lakers, a collection of young players. What were your thoughts on the pursuit of Anthony Davis and perhaps, you know, what kind of impact that he would have ultimately had?
Well, now we live in a time where social media is big. And I think that was a distraction to the young players because they were seeing the reports, they were seeing the rumors. And that would kind of take you out your game because that's saying to yourself, like, well, he doesn't want me here. So they're going for the big ticket in Anthony Davis. And I think that just disrupted the whole locker room and kind of put, like, everybody against LeBron James or whatnot, quote unquote, unfortunately. But I think that's what it was. I mean, social media had a big impact on those young players.
Do you think Anthony Davis would be a good fit with LeBron in L.A. and that would perhaps be a winning formula?
I think it would. I think it would. I think they'll get to the at least the Western Conference Finals with that. Depends on who they put around those two guys. I think they'll get to the Western Conference Finals, but I don't know if they'll win it.
Well, the expectations were certainly high when we talk about the Celtics. But, of course, with Bobby Harris hanging out with the Big E, kicking off Hour 2, SB Nation Radio. Much more coming your way right after this.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, welcome back. SB Nation Radio, the next generation of sports radio, and the Big E Sports Show. Before we get underway with our next segment and interview at O'Reilly Auto Parts, you are guaranteed to get the everyday low price on the parts that you need. O'Reilly Auto Parts will match any local auto parts store price on any like item. O'Reilly Auto Parts has the parts you need at the guaranteed lowest price. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Well, here we go. The countdown is on to the start of the Major League Baseball season. And as promised, we are going to continue to shine the spotlight on the Houston Astros. Spring training, it is underway. And once again, they're one of the favorites. They're in the hunt to win the World Series 2019. And time now to open up our phone lines. And we are going to welcome in the Houston Astros beat writer, and that is Brian McTaggart, who is rested and ready for the big season ahead. And I certainly hope you're enjoying all the sunshine down in West Palm Beach, Florida.
Oh yeah, nice weather down here. You know, has been since the start of camp. Nice and warm every day, so perfect baseball weather.
Well, listen, it's good to have you back on the program. It's been a while since you've been on, and this is just another season for the Astros with big time expectations. Spring training has been underway for about a week now, and it sounds like, you know, everything's going really well. Just kind of give us an update on the work that's taking place as they work towards a second championship.
Yeah, they've been down here for a couple of weeks now. You know, games have been going on for a week. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're starting to see guys make their first spring training appearances on the mound. And some of the position players are getting two or three at-bats per game. So they're still kind of easing their way into it. It's really been a rather quiet camp. I mean, they came to spring training with pretty much their 25-man roster set. You know, there are a couple of open spots at the back of the bullpen. Of course, there's a competition at the end of the rotation between Brad Peacock and Framber Valdez, and Josh James was in that as well before he strained a quad, so he's kind of been ruled out of that. But, you know, other than that, they've remained healthy the first couple of weeks, and it's been sort of a low-key status quo camp, and I think they like it that way.
You know, Brian, for you, as you're on assignment there, talk to us about as far as what matters the most in spring training. I mean, what should we be looking for? You know, we kind of get a sense that, you know, is this going to be how the team, you know, ultimately the season plays out for them, or are we just kind of getting a sneak peek?
Yeah, I think, well, number one, I mean, they have to gauge where they're at health-wise. I mean, they had a few of their key players come into camp coming off injuries, and one of those was Alex Bregman, who had elbow surgery in April to remove some bone chips, and he's actually going to make his spring training debut on Saturday against the Mets, so that'll be a storyline to watch. We know Jose Altuve underwent surgery for a broken kneecap the day after the season ended. Mm-hmm. You know, he's back on the field already. He looks good. And Carlos Correa's back was an issue all last year, but he certainly looks like he's put that behind him. But, you know, they want to get a look at some of the young guys while they're here, some of their top prospects like Forrest Whitley and Corbin Martin. J.B. Buskowskis on the mound, see where they're at. I mean, they're not going to make the team out of camp, but, you know, as camp progresses, those guys will head over to minor league camp, and then we'll get to see guys, you know, like the Verlanders and the Coles and guys like that pitch a little deeper in the games. And then, you know, you have a new catcher this year, Robertson Chirinos, and it's really important for him to catch all these guys at some point and get to know a completely new pitching staff and what they like to throw and how they like to throw it. But they got plenty of time to get this done. I mean, opening day is still 4 weeks away, mm-hmm. so a long way to go down here in Florida.
Hey, the Astros beat writer Brian McTaggart is with us tonight, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Connect with us at Twitter, at eRadio Sports. And, Brian, where can they check you out online and so many of your articles and features?
Yeah, astros.com is, you know, where you can check it out. Of course, you can link there through my Twitter as well, at Brian McTaggart. I, you know, provide updates from camp daily as much as I can. So start with Twitter. That's a kind of a good place to start and go from there.
Have there been any players that have made an early and strong impression? Any surprises from some of the roster?
Yeah, it's hard to say at this point. I mean, most of the pitchers have only thrown an inning or two. You know, Brad Peacock looked very good on Thursday in his first time on the mound in the spring, and he had six up, six down. The slider was sharp. He's working with a new changeup. Forrest Whitley, the top pitching prospect in baseball, I know a lot of eyes are on him, and he's doing some different things mechanically to try to get ready for the season. And so that's sort of a big storyline is how he is progressing. And, you know, his first outing went pretty well, and I think we'll see him again in a couple of days. But other than that, it's just it's weird because you have 60 guys in camp here, and they play these games where the starters will play two or three at-bats, and then you have a bunch of guys finishing the games who have number 60 and 70s on their back. So, you know, if you're a hardcore baseball fan, you can really get to see some of their younger prospects. But if you want to see the main guys play, you probably need to come down here a little bit later in March when the camp gets whittled down to 30 players or so, and it's about getting reps at that point.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Brian, for our listeners tonight, I mean, kind of get them up to speed on some of the movement that took place in the offseason with the roster, you know, just some of those additions and subtractions. And because there was a lot of movement that did take place.
Yeah, they lost two of their mainstays from their World Series team in Marwin Gonzalez, of course, the all-around utility player, and also Dallas Keuchel, the former Cy Young winner. You know, Keuchel's still out there on the market. I still think it's unlikely the Astros sign him, but Marwin has signed with the Twins. And that was a big loss. I mean, they helped fill that by trading for Aledmys Diaz, a versatile infielder from the Blue Jays. They also signed Michael Brantley, you know, an all-star outfielder who they can plug into left field as a starting outfielder and feel very good. You know, he's going to hit fourth or fifth in the lineup right amongst all the other big guys. He's left-handed, so he's going to provide some really quality left-handed at-bats. He does not strike out. He puts the ball in play, so that's really going to help. And then right before spring training started, they signed Wade Miley, left-handed pitcher, put in the rotation, and he had a terrific second half of the season last year with the Brewers and into the playoffs. And, you know, we all know pitching coach Brent Strom can get with him and to work a little magic, maybe to get him to throw a little bit harder, and you got him in the rotation, you feel pretty good about it. So, you know, they lost some key pieces, added some key pieces, but the core is here, and that's Bregman, Altuve, Correa, Springer, Gurriel, Reddick. You know, they have a very deep and experienced bullpen led by Presley and Osuna. And then, of course, you have Verlander and Gerrit Cole at the top of the rotation, and that's probably the best 1-2 in baseball.
You know, you bring up, obviously, the familiar name, Dallas Keuchel. You know, what are the chances that they could possibly bring back this Cy Young a winner? And, I mean, he certainly would provide some long-term stability with that rotation.
Yeah, I mean, it's just going to be a matter of, you know, the offers. And, you know, I think it's pretty clear that the market isn't what Keuchel had hoped it would have been. So at some point he's going to have to come back down a little bit and maybe, you know, take an offer for, I don't know, fewer dollars, less amount of years. You know, I don't know if the Astros would be willing do that at this point. I mean, they do have an opening in the rotation, as we talked about, that Framber Valdez and Brad Peacock are kind of competing for. But I'm sure if Dallas wanted to come back on a deal that, you know, made sense for the Astros, they'd be willing to listen. But I still think it's a long shot. You know, I don't know where he's going to sign or how big the market is for him at this point. But, you know, we're 4 weeks away from opening day, and you know, he's still out there as a free agent, so it's going to be interesting to follow that.
Hey, Brian McTaggart with us just a few more minutes tonight. SB Nation Radio, the Big East Sports Show, talking Astros, going around the horn. Astros beat writer, you know, talking about some of the injuries that had taken place. Give us an update on Lance McCullers Jr. How's he doing?
Well, he's out for the season, so right. You know, he had Tommy John surgery, so you know, he's down here with the team. He's, you know, obviously he's not going through any of the throwing programs and stuff like that. He's not at that point yet, so. So there's really not a whole lot to report there. He's just it's going to be a long year for him on the bench and doing his rehab. And, you know, I think this time next year, you know, he'll be back on the mound in spring and trying to get back to what he was a couple of years ago.
Well, a guy obviously a lot of talk about, and that is Justin Verlander. Tell us a little bit about as far as his offseason and what he's looking forward to the most in 2019.
Well, yeah, I mean, he had a big season last year. He just turned 36 years old, so. And he's going into a free agent year. So, you know, a lot of the top talk early in camp was whether he'd be open and willing to sign an extension with the Astros. And, of course, he would. And I think the Astros have interest in whether, you know, he signs that extension or not, we'll see. But, you know, at 36 years old, mm-hmm. I mean, last year he had one of the best years of his career and nearly won the Cy Young Award, finished second, I think, for the third time in his career. So he's really driven. He's really motivated. He's told us early in camp he wants to pitch until he's 45 years old.
Wow.
That's another 9 years.
Uh-huh.
And just knowing that the competitor he is and the hard worker he is, I certainly would not put it past him to keep playing this game for a long time. And who knows, maybe the Astros can get a contract done to where he does that in Houston for at least the next 4 or 5 years.
Okay, we're flat out of time. Brian McTaggart's been joining us. Astros beat writer, of course, the Astros. They open up their season Oakland at home. So appreciate your time. Thank you, Brian, and safe travels.
All right, thank you.
You bet. Much more coming your way right here at SB Nation Radio. Come on back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, welcome back. Hour number two, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Many different ways to connect with us. Join us online at Twitter, always live there. All you enthusiasts, chime in at eRadio Sports. Info, eradiosports.com, and podcastarena.com. As always, we have to pause and take time to recognize the folks that power all of us at SB Nation, and that is O'Reilly Auto Parts. Think of them for all your car care needs. They are close, convenient, and known for their guaranteed everyday low price. O'Reilly's, better parts, better prices every day. Well, it is hard to believe we are less than 1 month. I mean, spring is going to be here. It'll be in full swing, so it is time to get ready for the golf season, and we're going to talk about in our next segment the importance of golf club fitting and why it is critical in order to play your very best golf. And we are so delighted to have with us that is the CEO, Master Fitter, Master Builder, Mark Valier from MK Golf Technologies in San Antonio, Texas. Good evening, Mark. Nice to have you with us.
How are you today?
I'm doing great. Super excited to have you on the program. It's been a while since you've been on, and of course you were at the PGA Merchandise Show in the month of January. We're going to talk a little bit about that, but you know, right now, the Honda Classic, it is underway, and just wanted you to weigh on that before we get underway talking about club fitting. I mean, do you have a favorite going into this tournament? It's already underway.
I think I like Bruce Koepka. I think he's starting to gear up for the majors. You know, this is kind of the when the Florida swing starts. You know, I think the big guns kind of get energized. You're away from the West Coast. You're away from the Point of Greens. And I know Florida weather has been good most of the winter. We were down there for the PGA Merchandise Show, and everything is green. And, you know, like in Texas right now, it's cold, and it was gray yesterday. So we're still in this transition, and the oak leaves are trying to turn brown, and so we know what's coming in the next few weeks. Man, I'm excited.
Absolutely.
I can't wait for warm weather.
Absolutely. Well, we were talking about in hour number one about PGA National, the bear trap. And have you played that course before?
Actually, have not. I've been down in that region, but I've never played that course. That's on my bucket list. I've done a lot of golf in Orlando and Jacksonville, and actually never have in the Panhandle, but not down the East Coast and down towards Miami. But I definitely want to get down there and play those courses.
Well, when you were in Florida, as you had just mentioned, in the month of January, you and your partners had an opportunity to attend once again the PGA Merchandise Show, and where, it's the latest golf products, the innovations in the industry, so many intriguing things to look at. What's the best new driver in 2019?
Well, shockingly, that's going to come out unsaid. The Cobra F9 is a surprise.
Wow.
We most of the time it's the Ping, or it's the Callaway, or, the TaylorMade drivers, but this year the Cobra driver is kind of a shocking advance towards, putting some pressure on the other manufacturers, because we sold like 10 of them last week in our fitting sessions and so forth. And that's, I don't think I sold 10 all last year. So, but it's a good driver. There's a yellow version and a white version of Bynes. They're both the same. They come yellow or white. The Epic Flash is with the jailbreak technology and the new face technology they have. The Callaway bought a supercomputer that does artificial intelligence, and they designed this face, and they did 15,000 iterations of designs, and there's no way a human engineer could do that many iterations. They might do 4 or 5 iterations, for a design. The computer came up with 15,000 iterations, and so the ball speed is phenomenal on this driver. And I'm a big fan of the G410.
Oh, it's crazy. Hey, CEO of MK Technologies, Mark Valera, with us tonight. SB Nation Radio. They are located right there in San Antonio, Texas. Just breaking down all the new drivers for 2019, the best ones. So let's shift gears just a bit here. And Mark, talk to me about this year's top putters. What do you think?
Well, Callaway's got a really new system out, the Odyssey line. They've got a shaft technology out there that's called Shaft. I have to think of the name in a second, but it's a combination of steel shaft, graphite shaft, which actually repositions and counterweights, the mass of the head to the grip and moves the balance point up toward the hands. And gives you great feel, and that's really the number one putter out there right now. And, I mean, there's a boutique company out there I like Bednardi and Peretti. I mean, I'm a big Ping fan because they're not expensive putters, but they're very good putters. So you can buy a Ping Answer style putter for almost half the price of a Scotty, or a Bednardi or a Peretti. I mean, some of these putters. Then you get Sean Toulon is now a design for Callaway. This is the Odyssey brand as well. So it kind of depends on how much. I think the most expensive club in your bag should be your driver and your putter. You should spend the most on those two golf clubs. And if you buy a very nice putter that fits your style of putting stroke, then if you keep it, pristine and mint condition without a bunch of dents and stuff on it, you can actually, it'll hold your value. But if you got one that's somebody has in their bag and they'll put their head cover on it, I'm kind of a purist when it comes to that. So
sure.
Somebody comes in with a Scotty Cameron that, probably worth $2,000-$3,000, but it's got a bunch of dents and dings on it. It's worthless really to me, but they can always be refinished.
Hey, the CEO of MK Technologies, Mark Valier, with us tonight, SB Nation Radio. I've got to pause and send out a congratulations to Mark and his team as they were recognized as the 2019 Club Maker of the Year. That is a tremendous honor. And so kind of share with us, you know, Mark, tonight, I mean, what makes a great club fitter? I mean, the first words that come to my mind is it's all about trust and it's about confidence.
Well, I think we're equipment specialists, but we also know the golf swing very well. So our narrative and our teaching method is we kind of teach to fit. So I want to get somebody in there that has, that I can, if their golf swing is not like optimal, mm-hmm. but they have some like maybe a weaker grip or maybe an improper stance. So we try to work with getting them set up properly so we can get them to hit solid shots. And that way we can tell if that club is working or not. I think what makes a good club maker, club fitter is age and knowledge. It's just like anything else. It's kind of the 10,000 hour rule. If you do something 10,000 hours or 10,000 times, you do it the right way, you'll get good at it. I'm a big proponent of studying. I took a lot of tests to get this award. I didn't even know I was getting it, actually, but I was.
That's cool.
I belonged to this organization, took the exams. I had to create a YouTube channel and create videos of what we do and how we do it and why we do it and so forth. And I was at the PGA show and I get this email and it says, hey, can you stop by room, 205C, whatever. So I walk in and they're like, 50 people in there, club fitters from all over the world. And they, it was very interesting and I was kind of surprised. But I've been doing this since I was 20 years old and, you get some of these advertisements, master club fitter this, but you got to kind of be careful on how you kind of throw those terms around. And, you can't become a master club fitter by studying something for a month and then somebody gives you a pseudo title and says that you're now this. If your club fitter is 25 years old and been doing it for a couple months, I'd be suspect, but that's my opinion.
Hey, we're winding down our time with Mark Valier, CEO of MK Technologies, talking about his latest recognition, 2019 Club Maker of the Year, MK Technologies. And so as we wrap up our interview tonight, Mark, just talk to me about, what do you enjoy the most about your job? Club fitting, certainly, as you're talking about, you've been doing this since you were, 20 years old. Club fitting has changed throughout the years. It's evolved. But mm-hmm. what do you enjoy the most?
Well, I think interacting with my customers. I really didn't foresee me being a customer service type individual when I first started this. But I enjoy meeting people, and I enjoy helping people get better at what the game we love. So, sometimes, it's frustrating. I get a customer in there they say no more than me, uh-huh. and I'm an old guy. So kind of one of those narratives that I try to be cautious about. But, but working with the customers and 99% of my customers are basically become friends, and they kind of come and hang out with us a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes we get, way too many people in our building, and it's like, okay, guys, time to go home. Well, we're working with somebody, but they'll come in and sit and chat, and they'll go in the back and hang out with Jamie, customer service is number one.
Jamie Kirk and Mark Valier has been our guest tonight, CEO of MK Technologies. They'll take great care of you and to help guide you as far as what you should consider when you are going about getting a new set of clubs or a new putter or a new driver. And we sincerely appreciate you dropping by the show tonight. Thank you so much, Mark, and continued success. And we'll see you real soon, my friend.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it a lot.
You bet. Much more coming your way. Right. Yes. Much more coming your way. SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. Come on.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
All right, welcome back. SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show, hour number two. Many different ways to connect with us. You can join us at Twitter, at eRadio Sports. Email the show, info@eradiosports.com and podcastarena.com. We always want to pause and recognize the folks that power all of us at SB Nation and at O'Reilly Auto Parts. You are guaranteed to get the everyday low price on the parts that you need. O'Reilly Auto Parts will match any local auto parts store price on any like item. O'Reilly Auto Parts has the parts you need at the guaranteed lowest price. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. One of our favorites is back on the program tonight. He's going to provide some insight on the NFL combine that is underway in Indianapolis, and that is Jason Peter. An impressive resume, three-time national champion at the University of Nebraska. He was a first-round draft pick with the Carolina Panthers. He was a defensive end in the National Football League, and it's good to have you back on the program. Thank you, Jay.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, it's good to have you back on the program. So talk to us. Give us some insight on preparing for the combine. What does it take to be properly prepared?
Yeah, well, you know, it's different for everybody, and especially nowadays compared to when I was heading into that part of my career. You know, now you have the guys like the Christian McCaffreys, and, you know, he was, I think, the first guy who really kind of said, hey, I'm not playing in my bowl game. I'm just going to start preparing for the combine. And, you know, you think back to the end of the college season, that's, you know, somewhere in December. And that was always, you know, that gives you a good, you know, 4 months pretty much to get ready for the draft. And that was, or for the combine. And that was something that myself, along with Grant Wistrom, who was also projected as a first-round draft pick, when we finished our senior year and we played in the last college football game of the year in the Orange Bowl in 1998. Golly, that was a long time ago. But man, those years add up. But part of, I think, you know, and obviously having the luxury of pretty much knowing that we'd be first rounders as long as we didn't go, you know, and run seven, you know, flat in the 40-yard dash, that we were probably going to be first rounders. We kind of, and it's different than now, but the players kind of held, you know, a little bit more of the power in that we said we're not going to work out here at the combine, that we will work out for, you know, all 32 teams or however many there were back then,
mm-hmm.
at our pro day in Lincoln. And that's ultimately what we did because, you know, when your last game is at, you know, the start of January, as opposed to, you know, the other guys having pretty much an entire month head start on you, you know, your body's depleted by the end of the season, and, you know, you really got to take at least a week off to try to let your body start to heal before you kind of get into the grind of really training for all of those the workout specific sort of stuff that the NFL has you do during those workouts. But so it was a little different. Now, you know, you're having guys that are missing their bowl games, so they have, you know, an additional month. And you know, a lot will come down to obviously how these guys run, but certainly somebody maybe like a Bosa from Ohio State who mm-hmm. shut it down early in the year, is he going to have a you know, an advantage over, say, the Williams kid from Alabama? You know, both kind of competing for that first overall pick. I would think that the Bosa kid certainly does have an advantage because, let's face it, I mean, and it's funny because when you see these guys in the combine, it seems like the outfits and everything that they're doing is getting so far removed from actual, like, football movements. I mean, you know, if teams really wanted to know how a guy moves, wouldn't you want them in football pads?
That's a good point,
or
yeah.
Something at least, you know. I mean, there are plenty of guys that can go out and run track, but, you know, can they do it when you got a helmet on and you got, you know, pads on? But nowadays they got these, you know, everyone's got the tights on, they got certain shoes on, and it's kind of comical in a lot of ways, but because none of that really matters in terms of, is this guy a football player? Can he find the football? Can this quarterback read coverage? Can he, is he able to understand defenses and concepts and everything like that? So it is kind of funny that we put so much stock into this event. And the reality is there are kids, that are really good football players that somehow don't get invited to the combine, yet they still may see their name, on draft day, still get called. So it's a funny thing, mm-hmm. And I don't think it's down to an exact science at all. I don't know if, there's 32 different ways that teams look at, certain guys. And, they always say you just need one team to like you. And that's really the truth.
Former Carolina Panther and three-time national champion under Tom Osborne, the great Jason Peter, with us tonight, SB Nation Radio, breaking down the combine, what to look for. What's interesting, Jason, is we talk so much about speed, the physical aspect, preparation for this. What does it take to be properly prepared? But what about the mental training? How do you strengthen your mind to get ready for the ultimate grind? I'd love for you to share about that.
That was when Grant and I went to the combine, that's pretty much what we prepped ourselves for was, the doctors and everybody to kind of twist us and, check all of our injuries that have been reported over the years. But pretty much we prepared for, the mental grind of things. And that's especially when you are one of the guys that is projected as, a top 15 pick or a first rounder. They're gonna grill you, and even in my own particular case, with having my older brother that went through the process just a couple of years prior, mm-hmm. and he had some things happen in college, and teams, some of them wanted to see where the similarities were, where maybe there were differences, if I was destined, for, the same path. And it was interesting, to say the least. But, there's some funny stuff that they ask. Yeah, I mean, stuff
like what?
Do you prefer showers or baths? are you a guy that air dries or do you use a towel? I'm not joking. I don't know what that has to do with, playing defensive tackle or defensive end in the NFL, but they seem to think that it's some sort of insight into how a guy or whether or not a guy is going to be successful or not, for years to come. But it's comical, yeah. So
that's
we kind of just said, "Hey, this is what we're going to do. We're not going to run." But we'll do everything else, and part of it is taking the Wonderlic, which is a joke. I mean, it's about time the NFL just steps up and says, hey, let's just forget this. Because, I had every player, unless you have a bad agent, every player has a copy of the Wonderlic prior to showing up there. And it's just a matter of how much time and effort you want to put in to memorizing, the questions and the answers and that stuff. But, it's funny because you hear guys, even some of the top picks, you hear, about how they bomb the Wonderlic. And, some mm-hmm. of that's just rumor. Some of it is other camps, and I say, meaning other agents or players that may be competing with that one player on, those guys, they leak a bad story about somebody, to say, oh, maybe he's not all there upstairs or he's not smart enough to be an NFL quarterback. It's about time I think they get rid of that test.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so Jason, tell me this. You're a defensive guy. How is your preparation perhaps different than, say, a quarterback?
Well, in terms of the physicals,
right.
Nowadays I think they are able to test a little bit more of the mental. They will get guys, they'll have chalkboards in some of the meeting rooms, during combine week. And, they'll ask you, to diagram this or that, more so obviously for the quarterbacks and some of the offensive guys. And a lot of that stuff is also done on on personal private visits post combine, you know, where they'll bring guys in. You know, I went down to Dallas prior to my draft, and there were a couple other guys. Grant was also a guy that was down there, and Kyle Turley, an offensive tackle, he was also down there. So they bring a handful of guys that they were interested in, and I guess just, you know, get to know them a little bit more. And you hear more about that nowadays, about teams doing that, because there is such an investment that they're putting into, you know, these kids, that they don't want to leave any stone unturned. I think, you know, quarterbacks and players like that, you know, they still have to go and run well, but I don't think there's as much of, I don't know if there's as much weight put into it as, say, you know, a running back running well or a linebacker running well. You know, there is still, unfortunately, and you're seeing kind of walls, some walls being broken down, but, you know, the height requirements, the weight requirements that, or at least what they think, you know, guys should look like. And you know, the past few years, you look at the Baker Mayfields and now the Kyler Murrays, and, you know, it's interesting, and it's great to see. I know this year on the defensive side, there's the linebacker from Michigan, Devin Bush, who, you know, I think is, you know, easy one of the top five best defensive players in college football. And I was able to see him play in person this year. And he's, you know, he's a guy that can just play. His father was a professional football player, but he's not 6'2", you know. And you know, it comes down to, like I said before, one team just saying, we don't care about that. We just love this kid, and we want him on our team. And a lot of guys, you know, they need somebody in their corner, kind of, you know, hoping that they're going to fight for him in that war room.
Our NFL Combine coverage continues with Jason Peter after this quick break.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back. Hour number two, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We're going to continue our NFL Combine coverage with Jason Peter. Hey, we're wrapping up our time. Jason Peter, three-time national champ at the University of Nebraska, with us tonight, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. You bring up Kyler Murray. Let's talk about him. You think he's going to go number one in the draft? And also, the good news coming out of the Combine is what he measured out. I think he's like an inch taller now, right?
Yeah, he's just under 5'11".
Who knew?
A lot of people. A lot of people were thinking he was going to be sub 5'10".
Right.
So that's it's good for him. I don't know what's going to happen with him. And obviously, with Arizona having the first pick and just drafting a quarterback last year with Josh Rosen, I don't know what Clinsbury's going to do. You know, does he go kind of maybe the Bill Belichick way and, hey, we want to get out of this pick and let's build, you know, let's get an army of picks, you know, in this draft, and let's build the team that way? Because ultimately, you know, the truth of the matter is, the guys that make the team, like in the end, like don't make the team in terms of, you know, you're on on the opening day roster, but really just like make up the core of the team. Those guys are usually, you know, like the mid second to fifth round picks. You know, those are the guys that are going to be football players, and good football players, you know, for many years. They're going to play special teams. You're going to need these guys, you know, to do multiple things, as well as veterans. I mean, don't get me wrong. If anybody thinks that they're going to, you know, go from last to first with rookies, you're crazy. You know, it's just not going to happen. It's about veterans, and you're going to see when free agency starts teams are going to try to fill their needs that way. And, you know, whatever, you know, doesn't get filled in free agency, then, you know, maybe you look to the draft. But Yeah, I mean, for anybody to assume that a rookie is going to come in and do the same job that, you know, a 4 or 5 year veteran has that's already been, you know, competing at a high level, if they think they're going to do the same thing, you know, they're crazy. It just doesn't happen 99% of the time. So, but with Kyler Murray, he's interesting. You know, he's going to need somebody that just kind of loves him, I think, because I still think when it comes time to pull the trigger on a guy and they got to call in that guy and they send the note, you know, down to the table or whatever, or they send the note up to the commissioner, I just think it's easy right now to say, yeah, we draft Kyler Murray. But there's just a lot of things, even though the kid is he's electric and, you know, he's exciting and he makes plays and everything, there's always going to be that, but is he big enough? You know, is this kid going to get hit, you know, one time in the first preseason game? Is he going to get ear hold and is he not going to be able to get up? You know, it's just, I mean, these are realistic questions that teams, you know, have in the back of their mind,
right,
that they're talking about. Mm-hmm. So you just don't know until it happens. But I do think he will certainly be probably drafted in the top half of that first round.
Well, it'll definitely be intriguing to see how it all plays out.